Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. The focus of today's show is a synthetic drug with the harmless-sounding street names of Pink, Pinky, or U4. But this substance is anything but benign. Manufactured in China and sold over the internet, the drug can be 7.5 times as potent as morphine and has killed an estimated 20 to 30 Oregonians since its first appearance, including a young Clatsop County man in April. My guest today is Dr. Joanne Giuliani, who for 15 years has served as the Clatsop County District Medical Examiner. As such, she is responsible for investigating all suspicious, unattended, accidental, homicidal, and suicidal deaths, including the overdose death of the young man to Pink in April. Her diverse resume also includes being a licensed obstetrician and gynecologist, and she previously delivered babies for Providence Seaside Hospital. She also has served as the medical director of the Lighthouse for Kids, an Astoria organization that assesses and works to prevent child abuse. Welcome to the studio, Dr. Giuliani.
Thank you for having me, Joan.
What exactly is Pink?
Pink is a synthetic, what we call a synthetic opioid, and what that means is it's a man-made opiate-like drug, a drug like morphine or heroin or Vicodin, one of that class. But it's made in a lab. Now, originally, this drug called U47700 was made by the Upjohn Company, thus the U in the name, but they never produced it. It was going to be used for pain relief. They never used it, so it never was classified, given a schedule, whatever. So in China, recently, China picked up that they could make it and sell it in the United States without it being illegal because it wasn't classified. Drugs like heroin, LSD, and those type of drugs are Schedule I drugs, and they're illegal to have or sell or distribute. But U4, as I'll call it, was escaping that designation. About a year and a half ago, they then designated it now as a Schedule I drug, and it's illegal to have. But that's what it is. And it's made in China and then shipped here, and people buy it over the internet.
Okay. You recently put out a warning about this drug. What makes you so concerned about it?
Yes, I was floored when I saw the results come back. It's our first synthetic opioid death, and let me explain what synthetic opioids are, and I'm going to talk about them as a class. U4 is just one of the synthetic opioids along with drugs that you hear called fentanyl and carfentanil. And the problem with these drugs are not the abuse potential. Their problem is their variation in potency. The fentanyl derivatives can be 100 times more potent than morphine. U4 can be 8 to 10, or it can be 2 to 3. Because it's made in China and distributed however they want, however by whomever distributes it, its potency can vary. So that when the user, even a known user, orders it and takes it, the potency may vary and they may die from an overdose of a very potent pill versus one that isn't so potent. What scared me the most about this was its effect on the young people in our community. When this young man died, we're not sure because only he would know and he can't talk anymore, but we think that he thought he was buying oxycodone. He was in Portland, and we feel that that's what he thought he was taking. Young people in this community and in communities everywhere use these pills as recreational drugs, he wasn't an addict, he wasn't addicted, but they use them as recreational drugs to get high. So most of the young people know what a Vicodin and an oxycodone and all those, how they're affected by it. He was unaware that this drug was masqueraded as another type of drug, but actuality was U4. So that when he thought something was the potency of an oxycodone, it was actually 8 times that potency. So that's why I'm really concerned. My concern is that it's being sold, and especially sold in individual pills, as another drug so that their unsuspecting people are buying them and taking them and dying.
What effect does it have on the body that causes the fatality?
it, just like any other opioid drug or alcohol, it suppresses the ability to breathe. So that, and actually I'd like to get out how it looks, because in each overdose case, and I've had about five recently, it's been a real crunch on overdose cases. I'm hearing the same story from the victim's families or friends, is that they'll take it like usual, they'll swallow it, and you know, they'll get high and they're cool for a while. But then if they're to fall asleep, or combine it with alcohol, or combine it with a Xanax, or combine it with another opioid, the combination of that will suppress the ability to breathe. So if they happen to fall asleep, what happens, in especially in a couple of these cases, is they start to snore really loudly and differently. And that is a warning. It's not snoring. They're actually in a coma at that point. And so people think that they're just sleeping hard, and they'll try to wake them up and they don't wake up, and they'll just say, oh, let him sleep. But in actuality, you know, he's dying. So I like to warn the public that if, you know, any way I can to warn people about the effects of these drugs is that right before, as it suppresses the ability to breathe, the snoring is the body's attempt to get more oxygen in. But usually at that point, it might even be too late.
Wow. So these drugs are illegal now.
Yes. The ones that are synthetic from China and sold on the street are, yes.
So how is it that people can get them so easily?
On the dark web, on the internet, they're actually bought and sold pretty freely, from what I understand. The dark web is a part of the internet, or the web, or whatever the correct word is the ability to buy and sell things like pornography and all sorts of, you can get anything on it.
Okay.
But these are specifically sold, usually sold as U4 or pink.
Okay. Are they expensive?
I don't know that, actually. I really don't know. I think they can't be too expensive, because I believe in Massachusetts last year, they had 963 deaths due to that drug, where we had 30. So, but you know, that trend is terrifying to me. And
how long has this drug been in Oregon, do you think?
About 2 years, Dr. Gunson said. Dr. Gunson is the state medical examiner. She is the one who I got, you know, all my information from, her office. And she said that they've seen 20 to 30 since 2015. I think she said the first death was.
Okay. Are these all younger people?
No, not all. Mostly. Okay. And she said, actually, most of them aren't in the Portland area. They have very, very few in the Portland area. She can't explain it, nor can I. But in the cases that we see, the connections have been from another area. And if I may say, and just to explain further, is that if we had somebody dealing U4 in our county, I would have seen many more deaths by now.
Okay.
So I spoke to the detective who's on the drug task force. And he said that all the local contacts he has they're terrified of this drug. Even the people using and the people selling are terrified of this. And if you think about it, in a small place like this county, if you sold a bunch of drugs that killed people, you know, you're killing the people that they're your clients. So it wouldn't be smart. So I'm thinking that most of this stuff does come from people who don't live here.
Okay. What does the pill actually look like?
And that's what's scary. It can look like anything. The detective told me yesterday that they have developed such good pill presses that when they get this powder, it comes in a powder or pills. It depends.
And the powder is pink, which is why it got it that name.
Yes. How you order it, I don't know. It can come either way. But they have such good pill presses. They can make it look exactly like a Vicodin, or it can look like a Percocet or an oxycodone. It's just you don't know what you're getting unless you get it from a licensed pharmacy.
Okay. So it's really Russian roulette.
Exactly. And I guess my point of coming on the show, and I'm really appreciative of you letting me do this, is to have a platform to say that, to warn, you know, people who buy individual pills, you know, are the people at risk here. And that's mostly younger people. Older people have the ability to get legal pain medications, if more than younger people do. And so the people who buy U4 on the internet, they're playing Russian roulette, and they know they are. This isn't who I'm aimed at. I'm aiming this at the people who don't know what they're getting.
Okay. Because they're not meaning to get something that obviously is that dangerous.
Exactly. They don't know. They think it's a Vicodin, and it isn't. It's U4.
Are there some people who might be hoping to get this drug, though, if it is that much more potent?
Absolutely. And that's what's terrifying.
What is the allure?
Allure is to get a cheap high and an easy high, and an internet-bought drug that you can get high off of easily and cheaply is you know, an addict's dream.
Okay. You sent me a link to an article that Willamette Week recently did involving the death of a young woman to Pink. And she had bought the drug from a South Carolina dealer, and he had sent it to her wrapped in a pregnancy test kit so that it was really seemingly innocuous. Had you heard of that before?
Well, that is commonly what happens. The people send it from China, and they send the raw product over, and then they send it to distributors in the United States, and that is who that woman got it from. I also heard that they had two cases recently where they prosecuted or they arrested a gentleman in the Midwest. Also, he got it, the raw product from China, repackaged it into pills and sent it. And two of the Portland people died, and they actually went and arrested the gentleman in Minnesota. I think it was Minnesota.
Okay. The young man who died in Clatsop County, he was under 25. Is that correct?
Yes.
I wanted to ask, when you investigated his death, were you at all suspicious that Pink might have been involved?
No, I wasn't. Because actually we had never had a death of a synthetic opioid prior to this. And it didn't occur to me, nor did I know that the tests that I do on people's urine at the scene is when I do them, would come back negative, even if it was an opiate. His death to me looked like an opiate overdose. They have certain signs and things I see that is characteristic of an opiate overdose. But when I drew his urine, it was negative for opiates. So I sort of had to question, you know, am I totally off base? Am I losing my touch? But, you know, as it turned out, I was unaware that Pink would not test positive for opiates on a urine scan, but it is detected on the blood scan.
And you don't typically draw blood an investigation?
Yes, we do, actually. But that's processed by the lab in Portland.
Okay.
And that takes 3 months.
So 3 months.
There's no screening on the blood test. There's only screening on the urine test.
And as the medical examiner, you don't perform autopsies. They go to Portland, too?
That's correct.
Okay. I want to remind our listeners that my guest today is Dr. Joanne Giuliani, who is Clatsop County's district medical examiner. She is warning the public about the potentially lethal synthetic drug U47700, more commonly known as Pink, Pinky, or U4. This is Perspectives with your host, Joan Herman, on Coast Community Radio. So how did they determine in Portland that Pink had killed the young man?
Our young man?
Yes, okay. In Clatsop County.
Yes, he had an autopsy. And at the autopsy, they drew the blood, and then the blood returned 3 months later, which was last Thursday, with U-447-700. So that's the first that any of us knew, that it was going to be that.
So you just found out about this?
Yes. Death was in April, and the blood test came back last Thursday night, and that's common now.
If somebody really wanted to conceal their drug use, this... This is a good drug, unfortunately.
Yes, and if I may explain kind of how this all works. When I get to an overdose scene, let's take, for example, this one of his. I've had a couple since then also, but the police initially respond. Then they call me, they tell me what they have, and I will normally come to any suspicious death like this. So I then come. If I can get a urine specimen, I do that right away so we know what we're dealing with. And the reason we do that is because every death of a person, it's not that we want to blame the person who's died. We would like to get the person who sold them the drug that killed them. But in Oregon, there's no state law that we can send them to prison or whatever if this happens. There is a federal law, however, known as the Len Bias Law, that can give somebody up to a 20-year prison sentence if they distribute the drug that eventually kills that person.
And that is named after?
Len Bias, the basketball player that was picked second overall,
yes,
and never actually got to play and died before he could play.
Of an overdose?
Yes. And So every scene that we go to, and I'd like to explain this too, is every scene we go to, we look at as a possible, Lynn bias prosecution. There are very strict criteria, however, for these prosecutions. We have to have a clear path from the drug, the person who's deceased, the drug that they died of, and then a clear path to how they got it. So when we go to scenes like this, phones, computers, people, anything we can to get the path, how he got the drug that they get. And that takes manpower and it takes a lot of work. In this particular case, the problem was we didn't have a drug that he died of. So there's no way to then launch an investigation if we have no idea what he died of. Did he die of the other, there was a couple other drugs in his system. Did he die of those? I don't know. So we haven't had an autopsy yet. We don't know much yet. And so the problem, and what I'd like to explain, is we consider each case. I call either Josh Marquis or Ron Brown from the scene and ask
the DAs.
Ask if they want to proceed with a Lynn bias investigation. And if that's the case, we call everybody out and we do it as best we can. Cases like this, however, where we didn't have a clear phone path and it was in someone else's possession and it was just a very unclear path with kids, not kids, you know, young people who are not willing to talk.
So, did you have a lot of young people around?
He was staying at a friend's house, yes. And
okay.
So the friends were really unwilling to tell us exactly what happened, which is actually very normal.
How do you tell the family?
That's the most difficult thing that I do. And in many cases, I'm usually at the scene. And so in the days of Facebook, terrifying when it's a young person especially, because the fact that he has passed is going to get out before we can control it. So what we usually do is I'm usually at the scene with the decedent, and then we send out a law enforcement officer. Usually somebody knows the family. This is a small enough county. And we try to send out an officer who's familiar with the parents or the mother or father to tell them in person. This is rarely something done over the phone, ever.
So they just found out that their son died of pink.
Yes. Well, they did. Well, they knew he had died of something, of an overdose of something. And then I called them with the results as soon as I got them,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. And how are they doing?
I think they're shocked. I think, you know, they didn't understand. I mean, I didn't understand it that much until the last couple months, because I've been waiting for one of these deaths. They're kind of, I think they're in shock. They just don't know what to make of it, what that means to them. I don't think they know.
And you said in this case, there's really not enough evidence to even pursue prosecuting the dealer if you could track it down.
Well, not exactly. We hope to make the Portland connection. So we've involved our county task force. We've hopefully with his contacts in Portland, because this was obtained there. And I don't think it's that widespread since there's only been, three deaths in the Portland. Well, two in the Portland area and one with me in the last 6 months. So finding the dealer may not be that hard, but tracing it to our person would be very difficult since nobody witnessed the actual transaction.
I would think families would definitely want to find the dealer and blame the dealer.
Yes, they do. And that is a normal reaction. And we would too. We would too. It's just that we can't always do that. And we just want people to understand we don't pick and choose our cases because of who it is. We pick and choose the cases that we have evidence. And hearsay, or, you know, somebody said that somebody sold him the drug is not evidence. I'm sorry, it just isn't. And, you know, if we have proof, that's one thing, but hearsay is not.
Aside from the obvious signs that somebody is in the throes of an overdose, are there signs earlier that family members or loved ones can pick up on and possibly call for help?
That's the snoring that I was referring to.
But something before that, before it's really acute?
Not really.
As far as addiction, though?
It's very hard. I think if you talk to families of addicts, especially opiate addicts, like we're talking about opiates here, they're used to their family members nodding off in the middle of conversations. They're used to their family members nodding. We call it going on the nod. They just fall asleep in the middle of sentences. So that when they take this particular more potent drug, it won't look much different until that person is actually unconscious.
Are there other signs, though, of addiction? I'm just thinking if loved ones are hearing this interview, they might have suspicions that the family member or friend is involved in an addiction.
Well, I think the nodding, that's kind of characteristic. People aren't supposed to fall asleep in the middle of their conversations.
Especially if they're young.
Exactly. The other thing that I've noticed, too, and maybe it's just me, but I've been to so many scenes of people who've died of overdoses, that the most characteristic thing I see, and I know it sounds really weird, but is their bedding is covered with cigarette burns if they're a smoker. And addictions kind of go together, so many addicts are smokers, but it's weird. I will go there and I'll see 50 to 100 cigarette burns in their bedding, their quilts, their robes, and it's because they fall asleep in the middle of their cigarette and they drop it and it burns a hole. And I was at one recently, I counted 125 cigarette burns in their bedding, and the mere risk of fire alone is scary, but it's actually something that I've learned to look for.
I bet. I was amazed to learn as I was researching this story that drug overdoses now kill more people than firearms or automobile crashes in Oregon.
Yes.
That astounds me.
It is. We're getting a little better on the painkiller overdoses. Those are actually improving somewhat because of, I believe that the doctors are being more careful about who they're prescribing so that there's no diversion, meaning the person isn't turning around and selling their drugs on the street or to someone else. So we've cut down on our painkiller deaths, but our heroin deaths are now going up. So as painkillers are often a path to heroin, I don't know if we've accomplished anything.
Well, and I wonder too, as doctors prescribe less opioids, does that mean that the synthetic market is going to rise?
I would think that would be the next possible conclusion, and we've seen it. We've seen it here. We're just hoping the numbers are so small, we hate to say it's a trend, but it's kind of an inevitable conclusion as I see.
Okay. Who is most vulnerable to being drawn to synthetic drugs or opioids in general? And I'm not talking about people who are in pain, but people who want that high.
Well, I like to look at it as there's a couple classes. There are people that use drugs that are addicted to them. The ones that either started with painkillers or then went to heroin. And then heroin, then that gets hard to get, and there's needles involved, and sometimes that people have an objection to the whole needle thing. So it's the addict. It's the person who's just addicted. That's one class of people. What I see more heartbreaking is the youth. We all did stupid things when we were in our 20s and teens, and nowadays what we thought, you know, having a beer is now having a Vicodin. And so this whole recreational use of these drugs is very accepted in the under 30 culture now. And it's quite common. And those are the people that are at risk for this. Because if they're going to buy individual pills, you know, nobody hands you a prescription bottle with a doctor's name on it and a name. That's not how it's done. They'll give you a little bag and there's going to be two Vicodins in there and you pay for that. Those are the people that are at risk because they don't know that those aren't Vicodin, and they don't have any proof that it's from a pharmacy. So I believe that these two classes of people are at really pretty high risk. And I guess the ones that I'm aiming, what we're talking about in this warning at, is more towards the youth who, you know, make a foolish decision one day. You know, you shouldn't have to pay for it with, you know, death. Foolish decisions are foolish decisions. It's just that this is so lethal that I just felt I just had to say something.
Does it affect all socioeconomic classes?
Surprisingly, no. I don't see that, actually. I see, especially pain pill addictions, they're expensive. I don't see a lot of class distinction, actually. Yeah, I see a lot of middle to upper middle class kids that get involved with it initially because they can afford it. Mm-hmm. So no, I don't see it has anything to do with class.
So they're not that expensive then? I mean, if teenagers are able to buy them.
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah. We're talking $5-$10 for a pill. Most kids can afford that now.
Yeah, or they can find the money
to
pay for it.
Exactly.
And they're obviously internet savvy, so that wouldn't be an issue either as far as access.
Absolutely not.
Are they going around schools, do you think? Or is it still pretty scarce here.
It's very scarce here. And I think I said, too, if it wasn't so scarce, I would have seen more deaths by now. It's been 3 months. And I think that I might have had a case or two since then, but they're not in young people and they're not from here. They were people that came from Portland down here and died. I think I might have another case or two. If there was a local connection or if there was a school connection, I'm sure I would have seen more fatalities by now.
Okay. In the one or two cases that you just mentioned, have you not received the lab results yet?
That's correct. They're pending.
Okay. So you'll find out after that 3 month period.
Exactly. Exactly.
Is there anything else, Dr. Giuliani, that you'd really like to stress today?
No, I appreciate your forum. My job is operated behind a curtain, as I like to say, that I do my job behind a curtain that nobody really wants to see around because it's so, unpleasant and sad most of the time. But I really felt I had to come around my curtain this time and really put it out there. Because I think if one person hears this or reads it or whatever, and it can prevent one person from buying a lone pill that'll kill them, then I've succeeded. And so that's really what I wanted to say, that it is truly terrifying me that much that I'm willing to come up from behind my curtain and make me and my words public so that I can warn people of something that is just the tip of the iceberg.
Would you repeat again what you said earlier? If somebody is in the throes of an overdose, what sign they will see? What sign loved ones will see?
Okay, well, initially they'll be nodding. They'll be, nodding off in the middle of sentences, in the middle of eating and whatever. And then they will usually sleep, and characteristically sleep in a position where they always have their phones in their hand. It's just a kind of a unique thing. Not always, but they seem to be fall asleep right in the middle of doing something. Eating, on the phone, texting, whatever. And then they start to snore. And it's the long, deep, unusual snoring that is the warning sign that they're not sleeping.
And someone should call 911.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, I much appreciate you coming on the show today, Dr. Giuliani.
Oh, thank you for allowing me to say what I need to say. Thank you.
You bet. Unfortunately, we are out of time. Dr. Giuliani has been speaking about the highly potent, potentially lethal synthetic drug known as Pink, Pinky, or U4. As Clatsop County's medical examiner, she is responsible for investigating all suspicious, unattended, accidental, homicidal, and suicidal deaths. In that role, she recently investigated the overdose death caused by Pink of a young Clatsop County man. This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. Perspectives was engineered today by Graham Nystrom. The show can be heard every other Friday on the stations of Coast Community Radio. You also can find show podcasts on the station's website. If you have an idea for a show or would like to contact me, you can reach me at perspectives@coastradio.org. Thanks for listening.